Hi, I'm Maya, and welcome to Teen's Choice Book Show. Today, I will be interviewing Jennifer Baker, author of Forgive Me Not, which comes out this Tuesday. So first, let's start with a summary of the book. All it took was one night and one bad decision for 15-year-old Violetta Chen Samuel's life to go off the rails. After driving drunk and causing the accident that kills her little sister, Violetta is incarcerated. As a juvenile offender, her fate is in the hands of those she wronged, her family. With their forgiveness, she could go home. But without it, well, denied with forgiveness, Violetta is now left with two options, neither good. Remain in the juvenile detention for an uncertain sentence or participate in the trials, potentially regarding her regaining from her freedom, what she wants most of all, her family's love. But the trials are no easy feat in the quest to prove her remorse. And Violetta is forced to confront not only her family's pain, but her own. And the question of whether their forgiveness is more important than forgiving herself. Well, thank you, Jennifer Baker, for coming on.
Thank you so much, Maya, for taking the time to talk to me.
Of course, I'm so glad to be able to have you today for the interview. So I first wanted to start off with talking about the main character, the protagonist of the book, Violetta. And throughout the novel, as it progresses, she's seen as such a strong and resilient character because of all the things that she has to go to, whether it's the incident with her sister or even just her time in the juvenile correction facility. And so as she grows throughout the story, you kind of see the different ways that she's able to cope and understand her emotions throughout the book. And I was wondering, in the process of that, did writing Violetta ever make you question your own views or your own understandings of tough situations?
Oh, that's an amazing question. Thank you. I think so, but I think so more in the revision period as you go through certain instances in your own life.
Yeah,
I don't know if it makes sense to say I think I go into a zone when I write. And so the characters are very fluid if I know who they are. And Violetta and her brother were people I knew from the very beginning. And so I felt very comfortable going into their voices and understanding the story as they were understanding it. But that doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes or needed to clarify things like that. But I think in finding out who Violetta was, because I struggled with that towards the end of the book, she came forth in a very big way. And in that way, I definitely understood a lot more about what it means to forgive yourself and what it means to allow outside entities to kind of dictate what that means for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really like about the book, and especially with Violetta, is the way that how she progresses throughout the book kind of makes you question yourself and kind of look at the ways that you've dealt with such situations and how you allow yourself to forgive people and the kind of expectations that you set in order to forgive whatever people do or even what you yourself has done, because being able to forgive yourself is always a really important quality to have and to be able to understand that and kind of not necessarily move on immediately for the situation, but grow from it and learn from it.
Exactly. Exactly. And because this is such a stressful, intense situation, right?
Yeah.
It's asking someone to do a lot given the circumstances versus, oh, I yelled at my friend today and they didn't deserve it. But you still can grow, just like you said, from that and be like, oh, okay, am I just going to hold on to this or am I going to ignore it? Which is something that I don't know about you, but really annoys me is when I'm like, are we pretending that did not happen? Are we doing this? Why or don't we just talk about it? And so I appreciate just being more forward with that of, okay, can we just acknowledge maybe this wasn't great and move on?
Exactly. And previously, when you brought up Violetta's brother, Vince, he also plays a really important role in the story, especially in the way that it's written. So you get both of the characters' perspectives, which I think is especially really important in a story that's so family oriented, to kind of get the perspective of someone that was so close to her and how he was affected not only by his sister's death, but also the events that Violetta had to go through after that death. And so with many of the different challenges that he goes through and kind of how there's a parallel between how Violetta and Vince both evolve throughout the book, I wondered when you're writing his character and kind of putting yourself into the perspective events, did you ever find it difficult to understand how he might react to certain situations, or to kind of put yourself in that position and think, is this what would actually happen if someone were to be in that situation?
Yeah, I think so. Because for Vince, he's the golden boy, right?
Yeah.
And so he gets away with a lot. And so, especially for me as a woman, what is this like? And am I projecting because he's a guy, and projecting those things of like, he gets everything, but he does have his own issues and he does have his own troubles, but he's better at hiding it than Violetta. And I think in ways I identify with both of them in very specific ways, mm-hmm. of that kind of, you present yourself as being fine that Vince does. And then the Violetta part that is struggling to find a voice and get to that point of self-realization. And so for Vince, I did have to be careful because, you know, sometimes people are like, boys don't talk like that. But then I'm kind of pushing back too. I'm like, why are we making anything about gender in terms of behavior? Yeah. Like, that's not fair either. But thinking about like who he is as a person and wondering, but I was just like, I just feel like he would get away with more because he is charming and he does know how to play the game and he is successful in certain ways. And people just give you certain, you know, credence to do whatever when that's the case. And then as Violetta is, they're both Black and Asian, they're both Black, mm-hmm. and Chinese, and they're both like brown skin. So they might present more to folks as Black, but they have multiracial identities. Is like, there's still something that people may be projecting onto both of them that they don't want. And that I really understand.
No, definitely. And especially towards the end, you kind of see that dynamic. I don't want to get too specific for the sake of spoilers, but you do really get to see the difference between those two characters and how people treat them based on the situations that they're in. And it also really makes me think about a lot of some of my friends who might have brothers, and how there's kind of like a difference between how they're both treated and how their brother can get away with so many other things. Whereas if my friend is like one wrong mistake, then they have like a whole nother reaction and their parents react completely differently between the both siblings.
Yeah, and I experienced that because for the first 8 years of my life, I lived with my male cousins and they were older. Mm. And one was the eldest, so it was the grandchildren. We were the first grandchildren. And so everyone was just like, well, he is the first and he's a boy. And, you know, and then, you know, I'm supposed to be domesticated, right? I'm a girl, and I'm supposed to be like, and I do like cooking, but it's like, it's expected of me. And so there were things he just got away with as an older boy, and I did not. So I kind of understood that too, but I also wanted the love between them to be there, but there's a lot everyone's hiding.
Yeah. Everyone has their own different view or perspective throughout the story. And also kind of looking at the family's perspective as a whole and how they're also reacting to the situation. I think what's really interesting about the story, and specifically with the parents, is how they kind of have their own internal moral fight in which they have to decide whether or not they should forgive their own child, which can be especially hard because on the one hand, like, it's your child, but then you also lost another child at the hand of your daughter. And so it creates a lot of contrast between, am I doing the right thing? Do I need to like create more punishment for the daughter? And then also processing through the amount of grief that the parents felt during that time. And so I was wondering what the process was like for creating characters that have such complex emotions that kind of ebb and flow throughout the book.
Yeah, the parents were really hard. I'll admit that. And a friend of mine, Erica, she read it and she's like, no. She read them and said, I don't believe that they feel bad. I don't, you know, because I was having so much trouble. Because if I'm being completely honest, anger is the easiest thing to write for me. I don't know about other people, but it's one of the easiest things to write because it's very intense.
Yeah,
and it's also a relatable emotion, as are most, but anger, I think most of it is like when you get into like flipping chairs and yelling and da 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 da. It's drama. And so I had drama in it. But these parents do love their daughter, but I had them so angry at her in initial versions that the love was not coming through. And so I felt something was off. I'm like, something is off, but I can't. And my friend Erica read it, and she's very much a, she can be hard on you. And she said, she literally was circle places, like, nope, I don't believe the mother believes this. Nope, I don't believe the mother's here. I don't believe dad here. I don't believe da-da-da-da here. And seeing her react that way really helped me pinpoint. I'm like, okay, I'm still bringing that anger here. And so I had to smooth that out where it was them struggling with it. So it wasn't, and then the outside factors, right? Because, well, this is a public thing that happened. And so what are people saying? And what are people saying to you? And people are awkward in general, right, Maya? But especially when really bad things happen, people are kind of struggling to find some way to comfort you, but maybe that's not what you want. So, and that's what I've seen a lot. And so I was thinking about that judgment and then how would you react? And so that helped to be able to really get to that, because I had to think about it more and realize that I was still bringing in certain things that I didn't quite, not that I didn't understand it so much, that I just wasn't implementing, because I was so focused on Violetta and Vincent.
Yeah.
That I was forgetting that this was a crucial element to making them, I don't know, likable, but understanding why they're making these decisions.
Exactly. And there really is a lot of nuance to it, because from Violetta's perspective, she not only feels bad for what happened and is grieving her sister, but in terms of like the car crash that led to it, from her perspective, it's like this was an accident, it wasn't intentional. And so a lot of the other characters, from what I already kind of seem like, because of the some of the anger that they felt whenever Violetta was explaining that it was an accident, they weren't so quick to believe that, especially when you see the struggles that Violetta goes through, where she's like, people are probably calling me a murderer, people think that I purposely did this, when she knows that there are so many other factors that influenced what led to the accident in the first place, and that she herself is still human and still feels bad for what she did.
Right. And there's the separation too, because they're not allowed to talk technically. So that also is why Vincent exists in the story, because I kind of painted myself in a hole, but I always saw the story as Violetta and Vincent. I never saw it as like, it's only Violetta. But I needed that way to see how the parents are dealing with things and to see the family, because she's not allowed to talk to them.
Yeah.
And so if I have them doing this stuff and you never see them and she never sees them, then I don't know what you as a reader are going to think. And then I have to do a whole lot of gymnastics in terms of like making it like clear that something's going on. Whereas if you're with them for part of it, you're like, oh, I see it. I don't agree. Or maybe I do agree. I don't know. That's up to y'all. But at least you understand it a little bit more.
Yeah. Like you kind of get all the pieces of the puzzle so that you can build it in your own way, interpret how you think some of the things should have gone and how you feel about some of the different characters' decisions. And kind of getting to a broader view of the book and the concept itself, especially with the perspective that you get of like this teenager going through the judicial system, you don't really see a lot of books like that in the YA genre. And if you do, it's more so not from the perspective of someone in the system, but the perspective of someone having a friend or family member who's going through that. And I really appreciate how you've added like this unique perspective to the YA genre. And I was wondering where you came or where you got the idea from, because in your author's note, you talked about how you wanted to write something in which you could understand what would happen if victims of an alleged crime decided the fate for those who committed them. So I'm wondering, where did that question come from?
There was this syndicated show called Forgive and Forget. And it's hilarious what people will do for to be on TV. So essentially, if I did something really bad or not, maybe it depends on your level of bad, right? Like what you think of bad is. I could go on this television show, tell a live audience what I did and say, I'm here to ask so-and-so to forgive me. And that person can choose to come on TV with me and hash it out in front of that audience and maybe move forward, or they could choose not to. And so I just was watching this show, and then the person says the thing, the audience goes, ooh, ah. And then Mother Love, the host, would say, okay, go to that door. And if they're standing behind that door, that means they're open to forgiving you. But if not, they're not. And so the person would go to the door, open it, and sometimes someone was there and sometimes someone was not. And if the person wasn't there, a video would appear. And that's how the first scene came about in the book, is a video appears and the person says, I'm not coming to there. I don't care what you say. And it's like and I said, well, what if this was how the criminal justice system kind of worked? If it was really between the two people, if we weren't bringing in, I mean, technically you still are bringing in all these other people, but what if you didn't have judges and juries and stuff like that? It was really like the person who's claiming victim and the person who's being, you know, proposed as alleged in terms of criminal activity. And then you hash that out in certain ways. And then it built from there of like, well, what would that look like? And would you have this? And would you have that? And then I wanted to do rehab, but then I had to understand the terminology, right? Because technically this is a form of restorative justice. That's the terminology that is used, is anything that helps rehabilitate someone is restorative justice. But I have feelings about that. That is for a whole other podcast. But that's how I had to learn, because I'm just like, well, what if this is the scenario? But then as I research, you know, the criminal justice system, especially in New York City where I live, you're like, oh, these are the words that they use to defend putting people away. And so then it gets deeper.
And especially on that point, I guess for teens who don't really understand how the judicial system works or how it affects people who may be charged for crimes that were alleged or an accident and still having to go through that process. And especially for young people, I think it really opens up people's view to a perspective that they may not have had before. And especially when looking at the justice system as it is right now, what would you say to teens who are kind of struggling to grapple onto the realism, I guess like the realism of the system and how it can get really tough and gritty?
It's a lot, because I asked people who had worked and who had been incarcerated to read this book and let me know their thoughts on that. And so I think if anything, it's a starting ground to recognize that there's no way to really define a person when you don't know them. And that these systems, in my opinion, are created to really do us versus them. And I've seen it because I live near the criminal courthouse and there's a detention and there's stuff near me. And so there's a heavy police presence in my neighborhood as well. And those things, you know, when you pass by it, you just see people in suits and people plain clothes. And you just understand, it's like, okay, you are here to defend person and you are here to put someone away and you are here to do this. And I think it's really, I think that's the first starting point, is just to kind of understand that people are people. And there are circumstances, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't be accountable for things you do. I absolutely believe in accountability, and that's very much talked about in people who are for it against the system, is like accountability. So I think we start there and then try to understand like what the system actually does, like how people talk about it versus how it actually works. Exactly. And that's the biggest thing, I hope, like in the book, when you meet the counselor Susan and the Randall, you hear how they talk about it, but then you're also experiencing how Violetta and Vincent feel at the same time. And so you might question things, and it's absolutely good to question things. I think we need to question everything at all times, especially with what's happening now. I'm like, question it all.
Yes. And do the research.
Yeah, because it's available. And that's how I learned a bit more. You know, I'm in my 40s and there's so much I still don't know. But I really wanted, because these are teenage characters, Violet is 15, Vincent 17, I wanted them to have agency, even though they're in very, very tough situations. They do have choices they can make.
Yeah.
And how those choices affect them are different, but they do have a choice. And I feel like young people have choices, and I don't want people to make them think that they don't. But throughout the book, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's really teens, because I was just like, No, because I feel like they're going to have the least quote unquote power, but I feel like you, Maya, and every one of your, you have power. It just mm-hmm. looks differently exactly. than what I think people want you to think it is.
Yeah. So as you mentioned before with learning kind of some of the terminology that's being used, what was the research process like for the book? And how, like, did you go to any interesting places or locations to kind of learn more about what you needed to research?
Yeah, so I wasn't able to, the process to actually go into a detention center is not an easy one. You know, I think it's very different if I was a journalist and, you know, I'm doing reporting and Like, even to get on someone's visiting list is not an easy task, depending on the city and state. And if I have no one to actually visit, it is a very suspicious thing for me to come in and say, hey, can I just come in for funsies and, you know, like, do a research on a book. So that is kind of like, you know, and I don't want to go in and take people's stories to mine them for my work. And so I feel very sensitive about that, especially in the root of this. It's very different from like, oh, I'm going to Rhode Island to figure out what it's like to be in Rhode Island. So this is, that was different. So I relied a lot on firsthand accounts from people who did, like I said, like someone who worked in Rikers, and they worked specifically with young women in Rikers. And so there's those logistics that she was able to talk to me about of like, well, what it's like to go in as someone who works there and you have check systems. And then if lockdown happens, then you're there for hours potentially. And just like, you're getting the understanding of the logistics to create the mood.
Yeah.
Right. And so from her perspective, she's still someone on the outside who can go in and out. Yeah. And so that's why it's crucial to also talk to someone who experienced incarceration. So I did speak to a couple of women who were incarcerated and they said, well, our places look differently than what I structured, but in terms of your escorted places and da 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 da. And so those logistics feed the emotions again, right? She's like, one was like, yes, this is how it felt. Like, you captured how it felt of being talked about in a certain way, of being da 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 da. And so I can make my own world, but it is a parallel to ours. And so I do have to honor certain things, like you don't have shoelaces, or, you know, there's certain things like I had to think about, even though they have bed sheets, I was like, would you have scarves? Because that's something you can tie.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why she has a bonnet and not, or she's doing, you know, she's taking a t-shirt and using it for her hair. So those, like, those specific things of like, you have commissary and you can get things if people put money, or you can't. You can't have sharp things. You may or may not be in a space where you have a room. You may have open bunks. And so those are, but you have dorms or pods.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that it's like, but you have to go to school. Like, and that's when the book research and the New York City's corrections research comes in, because they're like, no, if you're a teen, you have to go to school. So they give you school. So I'm like, okay, well, they have to go to school.
Yeah.
Like, where they're in there. And so all that came from like reading websites and understanding logistics, but then like reading stuff that was more about like abolition or like being against the criminal system as it's structured, like, and a lot of Angela Davis. Which talks about her time. Like, she has speeches and letters and stuff. And there's one book, what is it called? It's like all the way over there. I think it's like, if they come for us, or they come for us, from Verso Books. And it's a bunch of letters between her and Bobby Seale and other people in the 60s, 70s who were arrested, who are writing to each other or writing to other people. And so you get that feeling of what's going on there. So like books from that and other books at Haymarket, stuff like that. So that's where it really came from. And then again, being near criminal courthouse, like, I can see the outside structure, but I can't, again, freely go in. I've been in the courthouse. That's something I can get into, but in terms of detention, it wasn't something I can freely go in. So I do have to imagine. And also, I did watch documentaries, but documentaries tend to have a feel-good quality to them sometimes.
Yeah.
Where you're like, and see, we reformed these kids. See, these kids are doing better now. Or see, the And I needed stuff that was a little bit more critical. I'm like, well, why does this work? And why are we just looking at it as a quote unquote troubled youth? So that it was like all those things put together of you just being like, okay, so I have to know these characters, but now how are they reacting to the environment I'm building? that is realistic, but also fictional, you know, separate to what, yeah, what we kind do of like experience.
Creating and then taking from what we already know. During the writing process, what was one of the hardest scenes in the book to write?
There was this point in the book where Violetta gets to the end. So I say, you know, you have the character arc.
Yeah.
Like, you know, rising and falling action and all that stuff. And so Vince's was pretty, I won't say easy, but I knew it and it stayed consistent for him. But for Violetta, there was this point after her second trial where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I was like, I don't know. I just know I need to get her here. But I don't know how to get her here. And so I just had a very hard time with that. And I just couldn't find, I was like, okay, she's doing a hunger fast. Because I saw a movie about people in prison who did a hunger fast. And I was like, she's going to do that. And my editor was very nice about it. It's like, okay. Maybe you could try to make it work, but I'm like, just admit it doesn't work because I don't know what's happening. And so that's when the letters came. And once the letters came, so Violetta's letters to Viv, which isn't a spoiler, that opened the door and helped me get her to the end of the book. Cause I was like, oh, that's what I needed. Cause I found I was avoiding for some reason, her talking to Viv. In previous versions of this book, she really didn't want to talk about Viv. Because I was like, she's traumatized.
Yeah.
She's traumatized. She doesn't want to talk about this and da-da-da-da. But I'm like, oh, but maybe she really has to in order to be able to find that agency.
Yeah.
And I'm just, as an author, am hesitating doing something for some reason or other that needs to happen. And so once the letters happened, that whole filled itself up a lot easier than it did before. And the letters came very easily and naturally once I wrote them. But man, I was like, for several years, I'm just like, I don't know. something happens here. Something happens. I don't know.
Yeah. So what were the other ways that the plot of the book were able to change after submitting your different copies to publishers and kind of understanding more of the direction you wanted to go?
Yeah, for one thing, I had a lot more people. For some reason, in my early drafts of books, I always have way too many people. So Vincent had like 7 friends and like, and that was unwieldy. I couldn't handle that after a while because they're like, well, what do they look like? And I'm like, I don't know. like there are too many of them. I don't know. So there was like all these characters that I had that are just gone. That's just like gone. Even in the detention, like there were more people.
Yeah.
And I just like, I gotta get rid of them. I gotta get rid of them. This is too many people. I can't handle it. And so I think that was the biggest thing. And one trial, the second one in particular, it changed pretty dramatically and necessarily because it was a bit too brutal. And I wasn't intending to be brutal. I was kind of trying to do a message, but even within that message, it was not as effective. And I'm glad my editor noted it. And then she said, well, why don't you try this? And I said, ooh. And then it turned out, interestingly enough, I talked to someone in California that, after I finished the book, by the way, that something like that actually does happen in California. And it's not about detention. It's actually, so I'll just tell you all what it is. It's because it's not the trial. So I'm not spoiling that. There's this thing where this woman who works with young folks, they every year they reenact a car crash that killed kids at the school.
Wow.
So that people understand what this, and so the students actually reenact the car crash and then they watch the video. And this is what the school is doing. This is not criminal, none of that. This is what the school is doing. And I learned this year after this book had gone to the printer. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? What do y'all do? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, yeah, it kind of re-traumatizes us in a way. But for some reason, someone's like, it's supposed to be a good idea to like kind of talk about it. But I don't know that there's like this real deep thinking about what that does and how you can. But I just thought, man, if I, I'd had known about that. That's kind of its own trial. And you know, I'm like, we're going to make you reenact this horrible thing. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to say it's helpful for your rehabilitation. But I was like, if this is what's happening in spaces, then I'm really not that off in what I'm imagining. Like, this is wild to me that y'all would do that.
Oh, definitely. And for the final question, I want to ask you something that I ask all my authors, which is, what was your inspiration for becoming an author?
I was going to be a doctor, but that seemed really hard.
Relatable.
That seemed really hard. I was like, oh yeah, doctor. And then I was like, oh, that's oof. If I make a mistake, that's
medical debt.
Yeah. I was like, oh, no. And so I learned to read early because my aunt taught me, because she would babysit me before I started going to school. Mm-hmm. And I loved reading Rainbow. And I just apparently had a knack for telling stories. Maybe it was just lying as a kid. I don't know. But I had a knack for it. And I just continued to just go forth and study it in high school, college, graduate school. Like, I never stopped. And I'm a big reader too. I read everything, all genres. Poetry, nonfiction, young readers, older readers. I have picture books over here. I love them. I didn't know I can have a career as a writer. And I technically have a career in publishing and nonprofit now. But I just knew I always wanted to write. But officially, I did want to be a doctor. Yeah. Well, I don't know if I dodged a bullet or not, Maya, but hey.
I mean, you did save a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah, I probably did. Thanks, CUNY.
Well, I'm your host, Maya Hay, and thank you, Jennifer Baker, for coming on to Teen's Choice Book Show, and thank you for listening to the show.
Thanks, everybody.